demiştik. Öyleyse bugün kazanan sadece Türkiye'dir.
Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is poised to enter a third decade in power after winning a tightly contested second-round runoff election. Espousing unity in his victory speech, Erdogan said Turkey is the only winner. But with just 4 percentage points between him and the opposition's runner-up Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, Turkey appears deeply divided. You're listening to the latest podcast from the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, or SWP for short, here in Berlin. This is where we discuss what's on the minds of policymakers, or at the very least, what should be on their minds. Today, we're asking how Turkey's Erdogan secured a third presidential term despite growing dissatisfaction with his unorthodox economic policies that have done nothing to curb crushing inflation, and despite his government's inadequate response to the earthquakes that killed thousands and displaced millions in Turkey earlier this year. We will also ask why the opposition failed to unseat Erdogan, look at deepening societal divisions, and ask what the election result means for Ankara's NATO allies at a time of war in Europe. I'm Esme Nicholson, and to answer these questions, I'm joined today by two experts in Turkish politics. Back with us in the studio is Dr. Hürcan Asli Aksoy from the Center of Applied Turkey Studies here at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs. Asli, welcome back.
Thank you.
Also joining us again is Dr. Salim Cevik, also based at SWP's Center for Applied Turkey Studies. Salim, thank you for taking the time to be here today.
It's a pleasure.
So before we start, I need to ask, were you surprised by the election result, Asli?
I was surprised after the first round, but I was in Ankara and I have had the opportunity to observe, the electoral or the voters and politicians as well. So there is really a huge hope. People were really believing that this time the things will change. But on Sunday evening and Monday, it was a deep silence. And there on 15th of May, I thought Erdogan will win the second round because it was a demoralization of the voters who were not for him, in favor of him.
And Salim, for you, was it a surprise?
Yeah, similarly, the first round was a surprise for me, particularly because all the most respected polling companies in Turkey has predicted an opposition victory. So it's not only me, but basically the entire research community is, I guess, surprised.
I think people have undermined Erdogan's political skills. He's a leader who has been in power for 21 years, and it makes you really powerful and strong. And he is not someone who gives up.
These elections were seen as a test of Turkey's democracy. Turnout was high and the result was close. Pollsters viewed the opposition as a viable threat to Erdogan's increasingly autocratic rule. So what happened? Asli, did the opposition have the wrong candidate?
Not really, actually. I mean, it's very hard to win under an authoritarian regime. But there are a couple of reasons why the oppositional candidate lost. First of all, it was an uneven playing field. While the government had all the opportunities and state resources, and they used it for their campaign and propaganda, the opposition had an uphill battle. So it's really not easy to win in this kind of situation. The government has used the judiciary, instrumentalized the judiciary for political purposes. 90% of the media is dominated by the government, so the opposition did not have enough access. But the second reason is the opposition couldn't establish a winning strategy. The alliance was very heterogeneous, consisting of very different political parties with different backgrounds. And this picture did not convince the voters. The opposition was not able to present a whole picture that is in itself consistent compared to the government that had a more consistent picture by aligning with like-minded parties. The third reason for that was the opposition could not convey its information about poverty and economic situation. So how exactly would the economic problems be solved was not could not be explained properly to the voters, and the opposition did not serve a simple remedy. Instead of, they offered a complex remedy by mostly talking about returning back to parliamentarian system and reinstitutionalizing, but it didn't really resound and echoed with the voters. Fourth and last one. Despite the conservative parties within the opposition alliance who have support in the inner parts of the country, the opposition really couldn't reach the religious conservative base.
I have to add that Kılıçdaroğlu's candidacy was pretty much debated within the opposition for a long while, and many people opposed his candidacy, particularly because he's not that popular among the public, and there were other more popular opposition figures. At the time, Kılıçdaroğlu appeared a better option because of his ability to keep the diverse opposition united, but with the hindsight, it's also possible to claim that a more popular figure would have a better chance. So in that sense, I think there is still a question mark on whether if he was the right candidate or not.
But that's why I said winning strategy, not a strategy, but it was not a winning strategy. It's of course easier to analyze it afterwards.
And Salim, turning to Erdogan, why did he win? I mean, elections are usually about the economy, but his supporters seem to have turned a blind eye to the soaring inflation and now a crashing currency. What was his winning formula?
Well, actually, in Turkey, it's not like that usually. It's become a fixture of Turkish politics to say that culture almost always prevails over economics. And this happened in this election as well. The expectation was that due to the severeness of the economic crisis this time, at least, economics would play a bigger role than culture, but it didn't turn out. The cliche of Turkish politics has prevailed again. And I think Erdogan managed this by two means. First of all, his alliance with Islamist and nationalist parties was much more organic and homogeneous, which was more convincing to his electoral base, also which enabled him to keep the identity issues at the center of the election debate. And related to this, he effectively managed to criminalize the opposition by appealing to nationalist sentiments and accused the opposition for being in alliance with Kurdish terrorism, which opposition, due to reasons that Aslı just mentioned, couldn't respond effectively due to the uneven playing field.
Now, according to Turkey's Supreme Election Council, Erdogan won just over 52% of the vote and Kılıçdaroğlu won just shy of 48%. What does this result say about Turkey, about the electorate? Salim, is it a divided nation or are there broader issues that even unite the electorate and politicians, such as what seems to be a growing anti-refugee sentiment?
Well, Turkey was always a divided nation, but Erdogan's dominance in politics in a way shaped the divisions. Now it is divided along the pro-Erdogan and anti-Erdogan lines, and it's almost divided equally. And this division runs so deep that it is really difficult to reconcile them. Of the very few issues that the pro- and anti-Erdogan camp largely agrees is the anti-refugee sentiment. But neither camp has any concrete and realizable policy solution to the Turkey's growing refugee problem. So that remains not a big player in the politics as you would expect. I mean, it dominates the discourse, but it doesn't shape voter preferences because while everybody is unhappy about refugees in general, the public, no political party can create an alternative solution that would convince the electorate to shape its votes.
And Aslı, what other divisions exist and how is Erdogan capitalizing on them? Or rather, what are the dominant discourses other than an anti-refugee discourse that are coming out of these elections?
I mean, Salim briefly mentioned that the government has capitalized on, you know, like using the anti-Kurdish sentiments within the Turkish society. I mean, it's a long-lasting dividing line in the Turkish society and politics, actually. And the other side of the coin is, of course, the extreme nationalism This is what came out of this election. If you look at the parliamentary, I mean, the results of the parliament, you will see almost, I mean, counted together, all the Nationalist Party make up around 25% of the voters, which is extremely high. This is the highest number in the history of Turkish democracy, I mean, since the introduction of the multi-party system. And I do not count the votes within the establishment parties such as the AKP and CHP. So the clear trend is nationalism, rising nationalism, and it brings anti-Kurdish sentiments, and I mean it was built on. And the third trend is anti-Western. So in his speech, President Erdogan has also said, despite the attempts by the Western powers, I prevail. So this is, and his alliance with the Islamists and nationalists brings him also to, you know, use very anti-Western discourse within the domestic politics. It will not necessarily mean it will have an effect on foreign policy, but we will come to that probably.
And Erdogan faces huge challenges as he enters his third decade in power, not least when it comes to the economy. What can we expect from him as he becomes modern Turkey's longest-serving leader, Salim?
Well, I mean, he proved to be a very successful politician in the sense of winning elections, that's for sure. But if we look at from other side of the angle, whether he could transform the society in the way that he wanted to transform it, then the success seems much more limited. If you take his statements at face value, his desire to transform Turkey into a more religious orientation, he clearly failed in that. Turkey is not more religious than when Erdogan came to power. But Turkey has become much, much more ultra-nationalist than when he came to power. So he transformed the society, but not in the direction that he imagined to do it at the beginning. And this ultra-nationalism will continue to shape Turkey's policy during Erdogan's third decade, probably. And with regard to opposition, it is a challenge for them to recover, because there was, for the first time in two decades, that there was genuine hope that they can win. And this created a huge disappointment that cannot be compared with previous elections. There will be probably some soul searching and demands for a leadership change within the opposition. If they can manage that successfully and preserve their unity, then of course they can make a comeback.
I assume that comeback may happen next year. There are more elections next year. Is there a possibility of a comeback?
Well, the municipal elections, the opposition will be in the defensive, actually, in the municipal elections, because they are already controlling the key cities. The most important point will be whether the opposition managed to keep Istanbul under control or not, and that we'll see.
And Özlem, Erdogan's campaign distracted from economic woes by focusing heavily on identity politics. He attacked, as you've already mentioned, the Kurdish community and the LGBTQ plus community during his campaign and indeed during his victory speech. How is this going down in Turkey, and are people fearful?
Yes. Yes. Especially the LGBTQI community and women. I have been talking to civil society activists, and Erdogan's alliance, especially with the very religious parties that are asking for changes in laws that are regulating violence against women and children, underlying the traditional and family values. So the LGBTQI community is afraid. Probably the government will start by closing down their organizations. I don't think that it will be criminalized, as it is the case in Uganda, for example. And with the Kurds, I mean, the Kurdish civil society organization and also political parties have been criminalized, vilified in the last decade. Anyway, they lost ground. But there is also a new tendency within the Kurdish movement, political movement, that they are raising the question, where did we fail? So I don't think that the Kurdish movement will go to its own corner, but they will have a self-critique and kind of revise and renew their organization. We will see how the political party will react. Yesterday, for example, the former head of the Kurdish party, Selahattin Demirtas, who is in prison since 2016, has said, although he's in prison, he said that I'm just giving up the active politics, but I will continue my struggle. So, but I think it was his message was that the party has to do the self-critique and continue differently. They have to rethink, revise their political organization. So these are the things that we have been observing in a couple of days.
And leaders from around the world have been quick to congratulate Erdogan on his win, with Vladimir Putin reportedly getting in there first, but Western leaders weren't far behind. Olaf Scholz has extended an invitation to Berlin. So Turkey's significance as a strategic international partner and, of course, member of NATO is quite clear, of course. Asli, to what extent will Erdogan potentially use this leverage to his advantage on the world stage, and what might change in Ankara's foreign policy, if anything?
Actually, we can be pretty sure that there will be a certain continuity in foreign policy under Erdogan, because he already started normalization of the relations in the region, and he had tuned down his rhetoric against the West. So, but of course, I mean, not only Erdogan's personal choices, but also this geopolitical shift has led Turkey and Ankara to act differently. And Turkey is not the only country in the global south that is not really siding with the West and trying to have the balancing act between the West and the so-called, you know, like Russia-China alliance. And I think he will continue to play an important role in the case of war in Ukraine, because he's the only NATO leader who is able to talk to Putin and Zelensky, and he will continue to play this, you know, mediating role. Ankara will continue also to pivot to Europe with a quite clear idea of, you know, being the energy hub. And also the hub for supply change, these kind of stuff. So this is the geopolitical and regional situation that pushes Ankara to act in that direction. But the main topics will be the same, and Erdogan will continue to act accordingly. But we are talking about Erdogan. He can have 180-degree changes in any time if the context gives the opportunity to him.
And Salim, what about Turkey's approach to its neighbours? Will Erdogan's foreign policy change with regard to Syria and more broadly in the Middle East and North Africa?
Well, it already changed. The change started last year when, as just Aslı mentioned, Turkey took more conciliatory approach to its rivals and toned down its rhetoric and became much less confrontational. I think this is driven by this dire economic situation in Turkey. And in general, I can make a vast generalization saying that in the last decade, foreign policy making was usually directed about increasing Erdogan's popularity at home. From now on, it will be directed on increasing Turkey's trade and investment opportunities. Turkey needs to increase its trade and attract investment, and this change already is visible in Middle East, in Turkish reconciliation with Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, which Turkey previously signaled as main rivals. That attitude of more conciliatory and more trying to attract, improve economic relations will continue to shape relations both in Middle East and in the larger. But with regard to Syria, it's a little bit more tricky. Erdogan tried to reconcile with Syria before the elections, but failed. He will try to continue with it. He failed largely because Assad didn't want to give him an election prize. Now that election is over, they will soon sit on the table and find out ways to improve the relations. But it will be a troublesome relation for sure still.
Germany's Turkish diaspora is the world's largest. How could the election result impact relations between Ankara and Berlin? As I've already mentioned, Olaf Scholz has invited Erdogan to Berlin. Asli, how do you see that developing?
I mean, I don't think there will be big changes between Germany and Turkey. I mean, you mentioned diaspora. There were some reactions within Germany that why do the Turkish diaspora vote for Erdogan, although they live in a democratic society, but voting for an authoritarian leader. We had two different directions in reactions, actually. The first one was from the Minister Cem Özdemir from the Green Party. He seriously criticized how could it be we should talk about it. it. We didn't hear anything from the Foreign Office. It's also under the Greens, but Social Democrat Olaf Scholz, a German Chancellor, immediately called, congratulated. At the end of the day, people are free to choose. There are different reasons. I mean, one of them can be raised about is it because of the failed integration in Germany? But also, I mean, I would rather focus on, because this is more our specialty, people see in Erdogan as a strong leader who could rise against the leaders in the Western countries, who is owning important issues such as the Palestinian issues. That's why he's very popular. I mean, not among the Turkish diaspora, also within the non-Turkish Muslim community as well in Europe, Arabs and the others, because he is the one that is really kind of personifying this strong leader. Going back to Germany-Turkey relations, on the agenda, there are like three important issues. The one is the migration deal, because migration is very important for not only for Germany, but also for other Western European states. And the second one was probably security relating to the war in Ukraine. And the third one would be probably energy/green transition climate policies. And I think Germany would act on that because Olaf Scholz quite clearly stated they're interested in working relations. And Turkey is an important partner.
How is Turkey an important partner in that issue? What can it offer?
I mean, you briefly mentioned Turkey is a NATO member and it's important to have the southern flank in NATO intact.
But I mean, in terms of the green transition.
I mean, the Europe is talking about green transition. It was before the war were high on the agenda. And Turkish companies actually have been working on that. The politics comes after the business, but Turkish businesses are really capitalizing on the situation that they will keep their trade and are preparing themselves in case there will be kind of an incentive from Europe. In that sense, but it's of course it's a long journey.
And Salim, what about the EU? Ankara's relations with the EU. What are the most important aspects of that relationship, and how might they change or continue business as usual?
Well, I think Erdogan is highly unpopular within across the Western world, both in the public and among the political class. But having said that, Erdogan's victory does not come as something particularly problematic for the Western countries and their political class. For one reason, they have developed an understanding of how to deal with Erdogan. And that's basically everything is on the negotiation table. You negotiate issue by issue in a completely transactional manner. Solving one problem does not guarantee that you will not have another problem in a second issue. But as long as you are open to negotiation, everything is solvable. There is a way to solve on every problem. So Erdogan is not a particularly something that fears the Western political class, and some might even got some relief that the devil that they know has won the election. And that comes also to a topic that Aslı just mentioned, the migration issue, because the opposition in Turkey has made it its agenda that they would revise the migration deal. Now that Erdogan is re-elected, I think the core issue will be to keep that migration deal intact. And that's easier done with Erdogan than with the opposition. So some might even have had a relief after the election results, I would say.
But there is a sentiment in the Turkish public that and the media that all the European states were really happy about Erdogan's victory, which is not the case, actually. It's really interesting how the things are being perceived in Ankara.
Well, it's clear there's more to discuss than we've time for. But for today, I'd like to thank our guests, Salim Cevik and Hürjan Asli Aksoy. You can find links to their latest publications in the show notes, as well as at www.cats-network.eu and at www.swp-berlin.org. And if you like what you hear, you can subscribe to the SWP podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So until next time, it's goodbye from our guests.
Goodbye.
Thank you for having us. Goodbye.
And also from me, Esme Nicholson, goodbye, and thank you for tuning in.